Bharat, welcome to SBS Radio's Armenian program.
Thank you for having me.
Bharat, yesterday evening we watched the premiere in Australia of Women of 1915. After the screening, you mingled with the attendees. What were their impressions?
I think the attendees were engaged with the film. I could judge that by their questions, and they were very interested in the film. And I believe that the Q&A session went extremely well.
Bharat, how do you classify Women of 1915? Is it a documentary in the classic sense? Since it doesn't have an introduction, a main story, the main body, and sort of the ending, it basically there are different chapters, and the eyewitnesses tell, you know, their stories of what happened.
Yes, I would classify it as a documentary film, and see, it's not one story that we're discussing in the film or telling the story of one particular story. We're telling the stories of a number of women who went through the Armenian Genocide, and also parallel to that, we're trying to tell the stories of the non-Armenian women who, you know, rescued these Armenian women from the genocide, the Armenian Genocide of 1915. And, you know, the only way they were able to do that by flocking into the killing fields of the Armenian Genocide and, you know, jeopardizing their own lives by saving these women and children.
Bharat, how do you structure the documentary?
Well, as you mentioned earlier, the classic way of a documentary is, or a film is, to have a beginning, an introduction, the content, and then the closing of the film. This one was, as I said earlier, it's a number of stories. We didn't follow the classic way of presenting a story because, as I said, we had probably 15 or 20 stories going at the same time, at a, you know, sometimes coinciding with one another, sometimes happening during the same time but at different locations. So it was in reality, the genocide was a chaotic situation, you know, and it spanned over decades, I should say, because it kept on, the repercussions of the genocide were felt way after decades after the genocide. So it wasn't one era, it wasn't one story, it was a number of them.
But it, like your first documentary, Orphans of Genocide, Women of 1915 is a narrow topic. Why are you choosing a particular topics for research?
Yeah, the topic you're referring to is the Armenian Genocide in general, and I think that's because of my heritage. You know, I happen to have Armenian heritage, and, you know, I've heard the first stories of the genocide from my grandparents, and, of course, they were very reserved in telling the details of the genocide to me, their experiences, what, you know, how they went through deportation. And they were, as I said, very reserved because they didn't want to let a grandchild of, let's say, age 10, 11, 12, know the horrific stories of the genocide. And I think they did a pretty good job in putting the seeds in me of, you know, that important part of my heritage. And later on, as I grew up, naturally, curiosity came in me, and I started looking deep into it and see why it happened and what it was that really happened and when and where and how and why.
Bharat, was it too difficult to research your subjects given the time passed and the locations across Europe, United States?
We covered a number of stories, and naturally, a lot of these stories, you know, even they had the genesis of these stories were in during the genocide in Armenia or in Turkey, but they had links to a number of countries around the world. I mean, we had stories that, you know, stemmed from the genocide, but it continued to end, or they ended in, let's say, in Japan, in Australia, in Denmark, in United States, Canada, you know, Armenia, Turkey. So, you know, we covered, since we were covering a number of stories, we also covered a number of locales and different cultures, different countries. Yes, it was difficult.
Any story in particular touched you while you were making the documentary?
You know, all the stories that I, you know, we researched on, and we first we got familiarized with them, then we tried to tell these stories. They were all uniquely close to my heart. What really stood out was, this is my second film, documentary film on the Armenian genocide. The most stunning thing to me was, you know, I've read or heard or seen a lot of photos or documentations on people being killed during the genocide in the most horrific ways, you know, rape and, you know, all the atrocities that happened during a genocide. But what I haven't seen before, and I enormously witnessed this time, was the fact of burning humans, burning churches, burning buildings, trapping Armenian villagers in churches and burning the whole church. So it was all over, and I haven't noticed this before. And on the, you know, and that was a new context to me, you know, like burning buildings, burning people, burning whole villages, cities. That was really amazing to me. It was something new that I thought I discovered to myself.
But it's obvious that you have left many details because of time restraint. Are there interesting stories you would have liked to include in the documentary?
I'll give you one example. For example, this little girl known as Shushanik, she was one of the orphans of the Armenian genocide that was under the care of Near East Relief, American Near East Relief. And I was doing some research on Sarah Corning, the Canadian humanitarian who saved, you know, by some accounts, over 5,000 orphans from the genocide. And while I was researching on her, I ran into a documentation. It was a correspondence between two individuals about this girl, Shushanik, who was a survivor of the genocide. She was a beautiful 4 or 5 year old girl, and they used her image, her photograph, her face on a fundraising poster. And based on that documentation, I found out that she eventually, we know that for a fact, that she died in a nursing home near Melbourne, Australia. And so far we haven't found the next of kin to get more information about her, how she ended up, you know, from all the way from Turkey or Armenia as an orphan girl to Melbourne, Australia. So, and we know that she died in a nursing home here in Australia, but we don't have more details. So I wish I could have more information on her to include her story.
But so far, where have you screened the documentary?
This is, of course, the, you know, we just did yesterday, last night, the Melbourne, Australia premiere organized by AGBU Melbourne. And the next Sunday, we're going to have another premiere in Sydney organized by the local AGBU over there. So the world premiere we did was in New Jersey, United States, about a month and a half ago. And so this was our second one in Melbourne, and the third one would be in Sydney.
But the most famous woman is Aurora Mardiganian, which you started your documentary with. What more you can tell us about Aurora?
Aurora Mardiganian, you know, to me, was the woman of 1915, because that's why I guess I had her story the first, the leading story of the film, in the sense that at the young age of 7, 8 years old, she started, you know, that chapter of witnessing a horrific journey in her life. And she started, you know, experiencing death of family members, and not just death, but killings and rape and butchery. And she survived. I mean, she was captured a few times. She was obviously violated, but she doesn't even, you know, really talk about it. But she has in person, in private, she's talked about that. And then after she survived, she made it to the United States and she became this central figure of a novel. Her story became this amazing book. That was translated to many, many languages. It was, and then, of course, the book was turned into a film, one of the top 10 films of the era. We're talking about the early 1920s. And if not, according to some film critics, maybe it was really the top one, the number one film of the era. And this lady, unfortunately, she died on her own at a nursing home in the United States in Los Angeles. She had a very sad ending in her life. And all her life, she lived, she was a poor lady, and she died alone, even though she had a son that had abandoned her.
Barrett, it was very interesting, the episode dedicated to Steve Jobs. How did you find more information about Steve and women of 1915, and how did you find his Turkish guide?
Before getting into the Turkish guide, it was very difficult to, you know, gather information on Steve Jobs' heritage, because the family members, see, the problem was Steve Jobs being who he was, meaning the genius who was concentrating on creating this new trend in technology, and I mean, we all agree that he was a genius, but at the same time, something was missing in him and his social skills with his family, at least, family members. And I mean, his family members were not really, you know, happy with him, you know, meaning the sister, the cousins, and so it was very difficult to get information on his personal life as he was growing up. And I was trying to get information on a part of his life that was never really talked about. We had some information, but there was some misinformation in those information, that information, because, you know, we knew that she had some sort of an Armenian heritage, an adoptive grandparent that was an Armenian. But where was she from? What was her real name? You know, where she came from? Was she a survivor of the genocide? So eventually we were fortunate enough, after a year and a half of research, to find a cousin who grew up with him. And he eventually told us some of the story. And we were very lucky to find a trunk, you know, full of Steve Jobs' grandmother, who happened to be a missionary herself. She was educated in the an American university in Smyrna. She was an educated lady. She was a teacher, and it's amazing when I, you know, held these her you know, handwritten notes and notebooks in my hands. It was unbelievable, because what she did, apparently that's what they did back then. She created her own textbook to teach the children, her students. And one image, you know, stands up. It's amazing. I was so impressed for the fact that now we take for granted. I took it for granted when I was growing up. For example, when I was studying, you know, physics, for example, the image of explaining optics, reflection, refraction, those complicated figures. This lady drew those figures by her hand. And they were very, they even had this 3D look to them. It was amazing. And this is being done by pencil on a piece of paper, on a notebook, and in the 20s. So, I mean, these details were amazing. I mean, you feel like you're dealing with a human being. And then knowing the fact that this lady was the one who was in touch with Steve Jobs, somebody like Steve Jobs, who changed the, you know, the face of technology, let's say. And it was an amazing thing. And it was challenging, but we did. We were able to find the story. And we're very happy that we sort of now know who Steve Jobs' adoptive grandmother was, even though he never accepted, he never called her or wanted to call her an adoptive parent or grandparents, because he thought the only parent, the only grandparents that he had are 1,000% his parents, and he never wanted to call them adoptive, but real parents. As far as the tour guide, there was another challenge, because I was in Turkey twice, and we tried to contact him. You know, we couldn't find him for one reason or another. Then I hired local people there. You know, it was, again, not successful to talk to him. And then eventually, one day, thanks to my iPhone, which was created by Steve Jobs, I was able to find him on Facebook, and I, you know, got in touch with him, and he agreed to tell the story, his encounter with Steve Jobs.
Got it from Melbourne. In a couple of days, you will travel to Sydney. Are you planning to travel to other Armenian diaspora countries to show your documentary?
Definitely. I mean, the next event that we have after Sydney is in Detroit, United States, the end of September. And I'm sure, and then in November, we have the screening of Women of 1915 at the ARPA International Film Festival in Hollywood, California, where we'll be receiving the prestigious Armin T. Wegner Award for Women of 1915. And then in November again, we will be screening the film at the Pomegranate Film Festival in Toronto, Canada. So far, that's the schedule.
Barrett, thank you very much for coming to our studios, and thank you very much for the interview, and looking forward to your next project.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.